Oh, I love this. This is the Lone Ranger.
Overture.
Yeah. Yes. Isn't that good? The Lone Ranger, right?
Yes.
And Tonto.
Hans Zimmer, of course, scored this for the new Lone Ranger movie that came out last year. We reviewed it. Remember, I wore the Lone Ranger mask and the cowboy
remember.
Hat?
Oh, I didn't know it was a mouse.
That was pretty sexy looking, I think.
Oh, you were sexy.
Not that. That nice lisp there, Dave.
Great, Tommy.
Okay.
You well, say that good, right? Sexy. Oh, reverse cowgirl. Okay, so look at it. He has a lip even. That's going beyond reverse cowgirling. Oh, slap.
Whoa! slap? That was supposed to be the whip. Nobody slapped.
You're trying to beat the beat of the William Tell overture.
Yeah, I really liked... no, I didn't. I liked the song. I liked the scene in Lone Ranger. I like that whole scene,
yeah.
But the movie, not so much.
You should try that Johnny someday Depp. With the William Tell. Or
what? I should try. Oh, do the reverse cowgirl to that song.
You can't do that.
I can't, but I could. All right. Let's
ladies, calling now. 602. All right. Anyway, where was I? Okay. So what's coming up now, Joseph? Oh. Joseph, where'd you go?
I told you.
Is Joseph still here, Craig?
Am I?
I thought I was talking to him. What's
joining
up?
Us right now on Breakthrough Entertainment is Jim Mickel, writer, director of the new dramatic thriller Cold in July. First of all, Jim, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Well, let me tell our listeners a little bit about the movie. In it, Michael C. Hall plays a Texan who initially hailed as a hero for fatally shooting a low-life burglar who broke into his house, begins to fear for his family's safety when the victim's ex-con father, played by Sam Shepard, turns up in town making some not-so-veiled threats. So, Jim, Cold in July is based on a book. How'd you come across it, and what interested you in bringing it to the big screen?
I had been a fan of Joe Lansdale for a long time, of his writing, and I read this book back in 2006. I picked this up sort of in a stack of Joe novels that I was kind of plowing through, and this was the one that jumped off the page. You know, it's got the best of all his worlds. It has this real beautiful... plotting, you know, that sort of takes a movie, sets you up in a way that you're kind of thinking, oh, this is going to be a very cool movie. I love this direction. And then it keeps evolving and keeps changing as it goes and turning itself into different movies as it goes. And I just love that. You know, I was really tired and I'm still tired of movies and scripts and stories that sort of are content to be kind of one note. So I love that. And then at its heart is a really, really beautiful, beautifully simple sort of father-son story that connects a lot of things. And I think at the heart of all the stuff that we've done, I think there's a really strong sort of basic primal character base. You know, you can see that it's We Are What We Are. And that just really spoke to me and jumped off the page and, you know, made me think of what the story would be like if my dad was in this movie. And my dad is a very cool... very cool way to handle a movie like this.
Yes, but you know, it starts off as one thing and sort of shifts into something extremely different about one third of the way through. That is kind of risky, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was a risk. It was tough, you know, and it was one of those like, yeah, this works. This works as a book, you know, and I know it works for me because it was what kept me coming back to this and not being able to put the book down. It was never really knowing what it was going to be. So I just love that. But it was tough not knowing if you were going to be able to jump to a film that was going to make that work. And to be honest, it kind of didn't work perfectly well. It didn't work as well as we had all hoped until it finally sort of hit its final form where it was the right length and the transitions were quite right, you know. There was a very clunky version of the film that worked when we first finished it where it was about 3 hours. And everything was good. Everything really played well. But it was just like, wow, we just have so much movie here and we got to boil this all down in a way that really makes sense. So that was tough. That was the toughest part of the movie was really solving that stuff and making that work. But, you know, along the way, there's a lot of, I'm a big fan of Korean cinema, South Korean cinema. And, there's a lot of directors there, Hong Jin-na and Bong Joon-ho. And there's a subgenre of very cool thrillers, very cool character-based thrillers there. That do a lot of tonal shifting that are very confident. And I've always watched those movies and felt like, you know, how do these guys have the confidence to be able to throw these curveballs and throw random slapstick comedy into the middle of intense action and violence and be able to make this work? And there was a moment somewhere during development of the movie where I found myself at a film festival in Korea and house was just surrounded by this stuff, and it was one of many, you know, times along the way in development that sort of gave me a kick in the butt and made me realize, like, yes, that's why we should do this, because it's different and not normally accepted.
So will we ever see that 3-hour version, or at least some of the scenes that did not make the theatrical cut, perhaps on Blu-ray or DVD?
Yeah, we're putting together I just pulled about almost 20 minutes of deleted scenes for the DVD, and it was a blast. I mean, it was amazing to go back and just see, like, wow, there's big chunks. You know, we shaved stuff off of movies before, and our film Stakeland was like, there were little things that went, little pieces that went, and We Are had a lot of stuff that went, but a lot of stuff that was just really finding the right shape for things. And in this case, there's full-on subplots that we had to pull out, and there's, you know, scenes that in the movie are 30 seconds long, and, you know, there's a great 6-minute cut of that also, you know, and just being able to, like, spend time with the three characters together in an enjoyable way that didn't have space for in the movie, but hopefully makes for a very cool DVD.
Okay, okay. And you've got quite an accomplished cast here with Michael C. Hall, Sam Shepard, and Don Johnson. Could you see this project with any other three leads?
No, not at all. Once that happens, you know, it's like you always have, you know, at least I do, when you're looking at a script and you're looking at a story, like you have a fuzzy idea of what characters are. Like, I'm never able to look and be like, you know, I think in black and white. I used to draw storyboards, and whenever I'm presented with color, I'm always like, oh, wow, right, there's color to things, you know. So when I think of things, I think in black and white, and when I think of characters, I always sort of think of a very fuzzy sort of a shape, and sometimes it's even just a silhouette of things, you know. With, like, little fuzzy images, half images of people I know and that sort of thing. I'm never able to look at things and think, like, oh, this is McConaughey and this is so-and-so, you know. I'd love to be able to. It'd make it much more easy to talk about casts and producers and such. But then the most beautiful thing in the world is once actors start trying clothes on, it just completely changes. It's one of the most exciting portions of making a movie. And Liz Vessel, our costume designer, we just had a blast on this. We had an office, and it's just surrounded with clothing. And like, you step inside with Michael, who just got there, and you just got to know him, and you're both sort of trying to figure out what the character's going to be. And then he starts putting on these sleeve pants, you know, and these, like, short-sleeve button-up shirts. And all of a sudden, that sort of fuzzy image in your mind solidifies. And it's a beautiful time of film, and it's a thing that I think you can't go backwards.
Yeah, you make a good point, especially when it comes to Michael C. Hall. Yeah, he's got quite an interesting haircut in this film. Do you find that physical appearance choices help actors get into character?
Totally. I think especially with Michael, because, you know, he's, you know, and even before this movie, I kind of felt this way. Like, I think he's one of the really great actors at being able to think into characters and play different characters. You know, when you look at character he played on 6 Feet Under, it took me a long time to accept him as Dexter. And then once I accepted him as Dexter, it was hard to accept him as anything else. And when you look at a movie like Gamer, I think, where he plays, you know, just a southern accent, and he's doing dances and fighting sequences. Every time he plays somebody, and I think that's kind of a really great actor, is he's able to dissolve into what that is. And it's not something you see very often. So many actors just play different versions of themselves. And so it was very cool. He was the one that suggested, like, maybe I got a mullet, you know. He was the one that suggested that. He shaved his mustache, you know. We talked about facial hair, and he came with a little bit of facial hair already. And he shaved that mustache and, you know, took good care of it and groomed it, and that all goes into it. I think it's maybe Polo cologne. He had this cologne that was, like, popular in the 80s that I think his dad wore or something. And somebody that he knew from that era wore. And he went out and got that, and he wore that. And so at some point you'd walk by and you'd be like, wow, you smell like something. So, like, you smell like my old chop teacher, you know? And that was something he did. And then Vanessa got carried away with that. And Vanessa went out. She got sort of her stent. And it's a very cool process to see that and see somebody not afraid to dissolve into that. And yeah, the biggest part of that is, like, once they start putting clothes on, it's an epic testament to costume designers. You know, they're not just picking fabrics and stuff. They're really creating characters.
Very true. Well, once again, we want to thank you, Jim Mickle, writer-director of Cold in July, for taking the time to talk with us here on Breakthrough Entertainment. We look forward to having you on the show again soon, and really wish you the best of luck with this weekend's release of Cold in July.
Thanks, guys.
And that was fantastic.
Thank you. Let me switch back over. Thank you. I'm going to switch back over to this other mic now. Yes, that one.
That's right.
That one's better for interviewing certain guests. Not all guests, but just certain guests.
Yeah, it's a good mic.
Right. Yeah, thank you.
Great mic.
Yeah, so we're going to get ready for another interview in about a minute and a half. We got someone else calling in, right, Eric? Yeah.
Yes, I will make sure they're on the line.
Very good.
On
Gia
line.
Coppola.
Yeah, she'll come in for a second.
A little background about Coppola. Saw The Godfather last night.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I should have known that this was going to come up when we talk about Coppola.
No, the music of that was phenomenal.
Well, did you hear that they named some Empire magazine named the top 100 movies or something of all time, or they had people vote for them, and number two was The Godfather, wasn't it, or something?
Better be.
Yeah, one of the Godfathers, I think.
Only number two?
Number one was the Empire Strikes Back. Number three.
What? Oh, that's
number
crazy.
Three was The Dark Knight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Who wrote that list up?
People voted on them. So a bunch of people who stay at home and don't do anything.
What, did they call a bunch of teenagers?
Probably, you know. It's probably just people who just sit there at home on the internet all day and don't really have lives.
And Greg, stop voting for these movies.
I'm sorry. I mean, I love The Dark Knight. No, but actually, I really would have put The Dark Knight probably in the top three. But Empire Strikes Back, I'm not into Star Wars, and that one was probably the most...
Star Wars is lame.
Well, and even though I've seen them, that was probably the most boring out of the... I don't know how many they've made. So, yeah, I have no idea.
Get ready for lots more.
Yeah.
I think one of these times when I don't have as many movies to review, or we don't have a proper theme... I think we should do, our best movie show, like of all time.
Yeah, Godfather. Yeah. Yes, Godfather.
We already know your pick. Yeah.
How about Eric? Isn't Godfather really right up there?
Yeah, actually, the first one is great.
Yeah.
But I like the second and third ones better.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes.
Well, I think we're getting a call now that I think the Gia Coppola, maybe she'll have to tell us about The Godfather. So,
Joseph, what's up now?
Joining us right now on Breakthrough Entertainment is Gia Coppola, writer-director of the new drama Palo Alto. First of all, Gia, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Let me tell our listeners a little bit about the movie. In it, Emma Roberts plays a young woman who is torn between an illicit flirtation with her soccer coach, played by James Franco, and an unrequited crush on a sweet stoner, played by Jack Kilmer. So, this movie is based on a collection of short stories that were written by James Franco. How did you come across the source material, and what interested you in bringing it to the big screen?
I met James in a very kind of weird, by chance sort of way. I ran into him I saw him at a deli, and then later that night, we got introduced at a party by my mom, who had met him, I guess, a long time ago, and knew that I was a fan of his work and that we would like each other. And so we were just talking, and I was working as a bar back at the time. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I just finished college as a photography major, and so. We stayed in touch, and I sent him my photographs, and we wanted to work together in some way, and he said he has this idea of making his book into a feature film, and that he thought it would be a good fit, and I just really loved his book when I read it, and I was excited by the opportunity, and filmmaking felt like an extension of photography, so...
Yeah. You know, you definitely can't have film without photography. So how closely did you work with James behind the scenes? And he is one of your actors, but did he essentially hand you the reins, or was there some sort of collaboration?
Well, I think part of the reason why he wanted someone else to direct it was because he wanted someone else's interpretation. And so he gave me a lot of freedom, but he was very supportive at the same time. And because this was my first feature, he told me, take the stories you like and write them in a screenplay format. And he really was my mentor and told me, okay, now do a test round of one of those stories so you can kind of get an understanding what was working and what's not working. And so that was really helpful. But, he gave me a lot of freedom but was very supportive when I needed him.
That's awesome. And as you say, this is your directorial debut, but you've got a couple family members who are very well known for their filmmaking efforts. Did that place any pressure on you?
James really set the tone so that this was a small project, and I was working with my friends and my peers that I've worked with on my smaller kind of short films that I was making. And so this was everyone's first film, and it felt very collaborative, and all that kind of pressure just dropped away, and I could just be free and creative. I was very fortunate that he did that for me, because I guess I was a little bit nervous about stepping into that, my family's field of work, you know.
Sure. But you know, Gia, at the same time, you had to have some confidence in the fact that you've worked with your grandfather, Francis, and your Aunt Sophia. That's an education that you just can't get in film school, right?
Yeah. I worked on Sophia's movie Somewhere and the wardrobe department, and I learned a lot when I worked on my grandpa's movie Twixt. It was just a nice time to like have that quality time together and really see how you make a movie from start to finish, and that kind of hard hours that, you know, go into making a movie. And I really just learned a lot from growing up on sets, and it's a comfortable environment for me.
Great. And speaking of growing up, what did you do to accurately reflect the world of Palo Alto's teenage actors? Was it all about James's stories, or was some of your experience growing up any help?
Yeah, I felt like what drew me to the stories originally was that they felt very realistic. The depictions of, like, you know, the emotion of that age was really raw and realistic, and the dialogue was really spot on. And I had just finished college, and so I had enough sort of separation to understand my kind of awkward teenage years a little bit better, whereas at the time it just felt really painful. But I was working with young actors, and so they really kind of told me what was authentic now and what was cool and not cool. And just by them being young and real, and like their hair and skin and clothes are just their own, and, you know, it's not so perfect, like kind of what I was seeing in movies and TV shows today.
That's very true, yeah. So at the end of the day, if viewers were to come away from watching Palo Alto with some sort of general theme, lesson, message, or idea, what do you hope that might be?
I hope that, I mean, there were definitely some dark stories in his book, and I felt like for me, I didn't necessarily experience some of those issues myself, but I knew that stuff was going on, and I felt like my job as a creative person is to find a way to make that work within my comfort zone, and because these are important stories to tell, and I hope that, you know, when people watch this movie, they can connect to the emotions and maybe feel less alone, or feel some sort of, some sort of connection.
Terrific. Finally, Gia, the flip side of that last question is what you yourself took away from the experience making the movie. Did it teach you anything in particular about yourself?
I learned so much from this. I'm, you know, there were so many challenges and at times, even though they were very hard at the moment, I'm very fortunate that I had those challenges to help me grow as a person. There's really no way to kind of prepare for your first film. You kind of just have to jump in, and we were moving so fast that it was kind of great to not overthink things. In order for me to understand the characters and be helpful to my actors, and I really had to kind of dig deep within myself to kind of figure out why the characters are acting the way they are. So, I mean, I learned a lot, and I feel like we're all human beings and we're all very complex, and that nothing is as black and white, so to kind of portray people that way.
Spectacular. Well, once again, we want to thank you, Gia Coppola, writer-director of Palo Alto, for taking the time to talk with us here on Breakthrough Entertainment. We look forward to having you on the show again soon, and wish you the best of luck with this weekend's release of Palo Alto.
Thank you.
She sounds so cute.
Yeah.
What does she look like?
She is cute.
Yeah, she is. She's cute.
And that what
she's a
talented.
Greg was.
That's a talented.
A look over here.
Oh, are you? Oh, that's a talented family.
I know. I'm surprised you didn't have any questions about The Godfather, though.
Oh, I would have. Next
we'll
time.
Get her on next
I want
time.
Her. Yeah, we need to have her call back.
You were hogging the whole interview. Joseph.
I'm sorry.
You
I know.
Are.
And it's just like rapid fire questions.
Interview
you know?
Hog there. Come on, man.
You hogged it.
I'm sorry.
I don't want
three
you to hog.
Two of us in the
what's
room. One of us behind the bulletproof glass.
Gia, I don't want you to hog Gia anymore. No hogging of Gia.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I forgive you.
Well, maybe you can...
you had me at hello.
I'll let you have plenty of questions with Richard Harmon. You know, he's going to...
Oh, okay.
We'll talk to him after the break. But, you know, I think that Frankie Lane should sing us into the break again.
Not Frankie again. Come
Frankie
on. There's
Lane.
More Western singers
no,
than that.
Frankie Lane needs to sing us into the
Ex-owner
break.
Ex-owner of the Angels was a cowboy.
Rolling.
Yeah.
Do we get a pass grade? Let's do it.
Keep them doggies rolling, rawhide.
Cut them out, right in, right in, cut them out.
Oh, yeah.
That was by my side. All the things I'm missing. I don't know the lyrics as well as I thought I did. The end of our ride. Here we go. Move them up.
Move them up. Cowgirl.
Rawhide.
And cowgirl. Cowgirl.
Ride them in. Cut them out. Cut them out.
Ride them in.
Cowgirl.
And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KBHX. Get your cowgirls on, and we'll be right back.
They're disapproving. Keep them doggies moving. Rawhide. Don't try to understand. Just rope them through and brand them. Soon we'll be living high and wide. My heart's calculating. My true love will be waiting. Be waiting at the end of my ride. Move them on, hit them up, hit them up.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again to Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona.
This is making my brain itch.
I know. What is this song we got, Joseph?
Well, I want to thank Iris Dement for singing us into this segment. The song is Leaning on the Everlasting Arms. It's from True Grit.
I saw that. Which
the
one? The first
one.
Or
the new one?
Okay.
The remake from a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Haley Steinfeld and Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. Great movie.
I like Jeff Bridges, actually.
Joel and Ethan Coen. That was a decent Western.
And Gia Coppola.
I got a snake in my boots.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Oh,
wait, no, that's not a Western. That's Toy Story.
Oh, is it?
I think.
Or it could be your bar crawl.
Can I shut this music off now?
Yeah, you can transition the music off because we've got a really special guest on. Yes, it is Breakthrough Entertainment's Old West show in honor of A Million Ways to Die in the West. But you know what? I know a lot of people are excited about something that's ending, I think, in 2 weeks. Not ending for good, but just for the season. It's called The 100. It's on the CW. And we have one of the actors here on the show today, actor Richard Harmon from The 100 and many other things. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've never actually seen The 100. I've seen the ads for it. It looks kind of like a science fiction-y type of thing. Could you tell us a little bit about what The 100 is about and who do you play on the show?
Sure thing. The 100 is about, you're right, it's a sci-fi show, kind of half and half sci-fi and half just pure drama, I guess. It takes place about 98 years after the Earth is destroyed in a nuclear apocalypse. And then at the time, there was 300 people living on space stations orbiting the Earth. And then 98 years later, there's about 4,000 of us. And we've combined all the space stations, but things kind of start going awry. And they send 100 of us down to Earth to see if it is livable again.
Wow. Okay. And so you're one of those...
I'm one of the 100. I play a character called John Murphy, and he is he's an aggressive guy. He starts off the season kind of as one of the lead enforcers, and then he slowly kind of doesn't feel comfortable with that role anymore and tries to take a little power for himself. I'm one of the, I guess you could say, bad guys.
Oh, so do you enjoy playing a bad guy, or do you?
I absolutely do.
Now, what is it about playing a bad guy that you enjoy?
I don't know. I mean, I've been playing them for years now, almost exclusively at this point. I guess I just have that kind of face. But it's just so much fun. You know what I really like about them is that in a lot of scenes as a bad guy, the whole point of it is you just take the power in the scene. And that's really where the fun is in a scene. And you have all the excuses when you're the bad guy to kind of take the scene's power to yourself.
I can see that. I can see that. You know, I interviewed a couple of the bad guys from Divergent. You know, Jai Courtney, of course, plays a pretty bad guy. And you know, they said that, and also Miles Teller, who isn't the nicest guy in the movie either.
He's brilliant, man.
Yeah, I know.
He is a brilliant actor.
Yeah, he's hilarious as well. But one of the things that they said about playing villains is they like to find the real they say that there's no such thing as a bad guy. Everyone's got reasons. Is that, do you ever, you know, especially in the 100, do you try to figure out why your character is bad, or you just go for it?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's like they said, I don't actually see him as bad. I'm just kind of putting that out there as, I mean, I guess everyone else kind of attributes him as one of the antagonists at this point. I understand everything he's doing. I just kind of see what he does and his actions are just his own way of surviving. He doesn't survive the way that everyone else does. He survives in his own way, and this is just kind of how he does it. He's had to fight kind of his whole life. He's been in prison up on the space station. So he's had to fight through his whole life. So that's really the only way he knows how to kind of use his physicality to get to survive and to do what he wants.
Okay, I get that. And you know, it looks like an ambitious show. Again, I haven't seen it. I keep wanting to check it out. Again, it's on the CW. But it's ambitious. Can you tell me anything about is there a lot of behind the scenes like special effects stuff that or is everything on set?
There is, they have a lot of, there's a bit of CGI, a lot of the stuff up in space, because there's two different storylines. There's the kids down on Earth, and then there's the adults up in space.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a bit of CGI up in space, and there's a little bit of it on Earth, but for the most part, we kind of try to do everything on set.
Oh, okay. Excellent. And, you know, so I know that the show, it has been picked up for a second season, correct?
It has, yes.
Excellent, excellent. And so I know, is there two more episodes left this season, or is it just one?
Yeah, we got the two-part finale, so this Wednesday will be the first part, and then next Wednesday will be the season finale.
Excellent. Any hints? Again, I haven't seen it, but I know that a lot of our listeners have. I don't want you to reveal anything, you know, but what can people look forward to? Any tidbits?
People can look forward to just straight-up mayhem.
Okay.
Absolute catastrophe. It's just the last episode, a lot of stuff is happening. It's definitely, they're very fast-paced. The last two episodes are incredibly fast-paced, especially the season finale.
I think I'll have to tune into those and then catch up, from the first episode. And, you know.
And we're going to play word association now. What I want you to do, there's two out of three of us, at least, in this studio that are great football fans of a particular school. Now, if I said USC, what are you going to say?
Hatred.
Exactly. I was reading up on you're a diehard Notre Dame football fan.
I got a tattoo on my body of a Notre Dame logo.
Yeah, that is right so there. Cool. Great, great rivalry, yeah. Right, over the years.
It's true. I respect them as far as that's concerned, but I don't respect them a lot of other ways.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Notre Dame's very, very cool, though.
Yeah.
Now, I'm,
no, and of course, I hold nothing against USC. If anyone's from there,
I know.
Just, you know, that's part of the fun of being a fan. Is you get to hate on other fans.
Exactly.
Other
no, that's part of the fun part of sports, and because we have sports shows.
Why we
too.
Do it.
Exactly. Now, I'm reading up on some of your interests. You just seem so young to have your idol as Bob Dylan.
That's just how I grew up, and that's just my parents raised me on him, you know, Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, Fleetwood Mac, that whole stuff. And Bob was just kind of the guy who I really took to, and still have to this day. I just continue to learn things from him, no matter. Throughout the years, and I feel like I continue to learn from him for kind of the rest of the time. I feel like he's going to be there for me.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Eric speaking, but I noticed you're on Bates Motel.
Yes.
And I'm trying to figure out, is there another season coming up?
I think they got picked up for a third season, yeah.
Awesome, because I love that show.
Yeah,
and you were in the second season? You were in the second season, correct?
I was in the first season, and then I was in one episode of the second season.
Yeah, because I saw the first season. I haven't seen the second season yet, but I can't wait.
Yeah, I punched Norman in the face in the first season.
Wow. I remember that, yes.
And there you go.
And I've only watched, I've got to catch up with the second season, because I love the first season. I watched the first episode so far of the second season. What episode do you know, where were you in the second season?
Just the first episode. I really don't do much. Yeah, it's you'll see why when it all comes up.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
Yeah.
And I know you got a big movie coming up. Are you filming it currently, or and could you tell us a little anything about that one?
Which one?
Is Jeff Bridges in one that? Or what?
Oh my God! I wish.
No. Okay. What?
Kidding me? Jeff Bridges is like my guy. The Big Lebowski is my favorite movie of all time.
Really? Really? Okay.
I love
that
it too.
That would be huge for me. I unfortunately am not doing a movie with Jeff Bridges.
All right. I think I'm
the Age of Adeline.
Right. Age of Adeline.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison
Blake
Ford.
Lively. Yeah, I did that.
How did I describe?
Already done that. I think they're all done shooting that now. I don't know.
Harrison Ford isn't big.
I have a fun role.
Harrison Ford isn't big.
I didn't get to meet him.
You didn't get to meet him?
I didn't get to meet him. I got to meet Blake Lively, and she is just a sweetheart.
Cutie.
Yeah, she used to be on the CW as well, right? Yeah.
She did. That was the thing. I was like, look at this. This is all coming full circle. And it's funny, because the first thing I ever did when I was 11 years old was with her her now husband, Ryan Reynolds.
Wow, that's still, I'm very angry about that still. I don't know about.
Oh,
oh, come on, Ryan's a funny guy.
I know he's
a really great guy. They seem like a good match.
Yeah,
Van Wilder is one of my favorite comedies.
Yes,
there you go.
And so, I want to remind all of our listeners we're speaking with actor from The 100. His name is Richard Harmon, and he's in many other things. As we said earlier, he kind of plays a bad guy, but in a lot of things. But regarding The 100, tell us about the next season. Have you already started filming? When do you go back on the set?
They start filming next month, I believe.
Wow. Okay.
So I don't think any of us really know what's quite what's happening yet.
Okay. All right. And so what are you doing now? Are you working on any projects currently?
Yeah, I'm just about to do was shooting a movie called Christmas Tale. I'm not a bad guy in it.
Okay.
Up here in BC in Canada, and then I'm going to do a episode of a TV show called The Intruders. So I start shooting that next week.
Oh, exciting. Is A Christmas Tale, is that a Christmas movie? I mean, not necessarily.
Yeah, it's a Christmas disaster film.
Christmas disaster film. Awesome.
Which I've always wanted to do a disaster film, and I'm a big fan of Christmas, so I guess it was a dream come true.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait for that. Well, you know, again, Richard Harmon, thank you so much for joining us here on Breakthrough Entertainment. I think I'm gonna check out. Yeah, so remind us when the 100 is on. It's on Wednesday nights on the CW,
Wednesdays
right?
Wednesdays at 9, yeah, on CW.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to check out the two-part finale. Once this week, once next week, and then I'm going to catch up from then. I hope all of our listeners do as well.
Perfect. Are you guys Notre Dame fans? We never established this.
Well, two of us are USC fans, but we
But we are fans of the movie Rudy.
Now he'll never be on the show again.
Who isn't a fan of the movie Rudy?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But we do like Notre Dame. They've had a great, rich history of sports and many different sports, and we do honor Notre Dame tremendously.
Wonderful, and I did the same for you. I went and saw the Notre Dame USC game live at USC 2 years ago.
Ooh.
Heck of a game.
Yeah, they've had a rich history. And but one last question: how did you get so good at laser tag?
Oh man, well that's just practice. That's just pure heart and determination.
Is it? Do you play paintball too, or whatever?
I don't. I haven't played paintball in a while. But laser tag is. I got scars all over my hips from laser tag.
Really? How do you do that?
Oh yeah. Oh well, I mean, the place we play, it's a three-story place, so they have ramps going in between each story.
Oh
and
wow!
And I discovered one time that the vest is a little slippery, so if I do a penguin dive, I can slide down the ramps while shooting the gun. So I did that, and I've continued to do that, and I usually end up bleeding from my hips.
Oh man, you're sort of
You got to give your heart for the team.
Wow, is this competition? Is it competitive?
This is like professional competition.
Oh, nice.
Usually it's against like 11 or 12 year olds.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm going to say I challenge you to a laser tag game. I hope that you come to Phoenix.
I would love to.
Yeah, excellent. And I bet that really helps with the 100 as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, again, Richard, thank you so much for joining us. Richard Harmon, actor.
Oh, thank you for having
and
me.
And we'd love to have you on again soon, so please please stay in touch.
Yeah, great.
Thanks again. Yeah. Awesome. Great guy.
Thanks,
wow, very cool. Yeah.
And congratulations again on the pickup for the second season of The 100. As we talked about a couple weeks ago that, you know, a lot of shows did not make the cut, but The 100 definitely did.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Sounds like a nice kid.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, so bad guy, you can't go wrong with that. Would you rather play a good guy or a bad guy in it?
I'd
rather play a good guy. Let's have a vote here. Good guy, you say get bad guy.
I know. Either way, I'm happy with either way.
Either way? No, you don't want to say that.
Either way.
I mean, both ways. You're saying.
Are we talking about reverse cowgirl again?
I don't know.
But going back to that again. Huh?
Oh yeah. So Joseph,
Eric reaches out in front of a person, and he's satisfied with whatever's there.
Good guy or bad guy?
Greg.
I'm being a good guy way too often in life, so I would really rather be a bad guy.
Okay, Greg, good or bad guy?
It'd be fun to play a bad guy, just something different.
I want to play a good guy.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
No, that's not.
I do play
in a Disney film.
That was a little over the top. Yes. Yeah.
Oh. No, Ron Jeremy, is he a good guy or a bad guy?
He's a great guy.
Oh, okay.
He's phenomenal.
Then I'm going to play a great guy.
Depends on
what. No, he is a really good guy in real life.
Oh,
he's
cool.
Nice.
Wow. Well, cool. Okay. Well, again, this is Breakthrough Entertainment's West
Are we,
Oakland
are we
show.
On 9 or 10 there?
We're on 10. I'm sorry. I didn't switch it. I was
you didn't
excited
switch.
About our interview. I know I didn't switch it. But, yeah, so this is Breakthrough Entertainment's Old West show. We are, you know, it's all in honor of A Million Ways to Die in the West. What are your facial expressions
all
about?
Well, I just saw what we're going to talk about on sports, and it looks good.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for that at noon. But we still got another.
Excuse me, Johnny.
We've got another hour and 20 minutes of Breakthrough Entertainment. We're celebrating the Old West with all these songs from the Old West movies.
Oh, yeah, let's do one.
We've got three big thumbs up for A Million Ways to Die in the West. And you know another movie that I gave a thumbs up to?
No.
Appaloosa. This song is from it.
I love Appaloosa with
Ed Harris.
That was one of my favorite movies. And who's the star? The other guy. He's great.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, he played and, phenomenal.
Renee Zellweger was in the movie as well.
Oh, that was a fantastic movie.
It was. I've got a picture. I'm going to show you the picture during the break.
Oh,
it's
I love
me
that.
In Appaloosa. It was a Christmas card when
And that guy was very loyal to Ed Harris.
And you know what? You know what? Ed Harris, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
He can also sing. This is him singing You'll Never Leave My Heart.
Now let's listen to him sing.
You'll never leave my heart.
No, no, no.
Wait, Greg, you don't want to hear Joseph singing with Ed?
No, I think we should let Ed do it on his own.
I don't know the lyrics, otherwise I would.
Very good. See, this is fantastic. We just got to take it away as lyrics.
The day's working out for you after all.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Phenomenal.
He's singing this. I had no idea. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back.
Become the tree, and when the day does come, when you and I depart, you'll be the one who's leaving, cause you'll never leave my heart. And when the day
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch.
And that is Mel Brooks.
He wrote the song.
No, he wrote the song.
I mean,
he wrote
the song. Frankie Lane.
Not Frankie again.
Frankie Lane.
What is up with Frankie?
He must have been a busy guy.
You know what? Here's the story behind this song. This is, of course, the theme song to Blazing Saddles. Of course, Mel Brooks.
Yeah, Mel Brooks.
But Frankie Lane, when he wrote, when he sang this song, he did not know that the movie was a comedy. So keep that in mind when you're listening to it. He thought that this was like a serious Western, old-timey Western type movie.
How could he not know that?
He just didn't know. They
Let's
didn't
get
tell
Frankie
him.
On the line.
Would it have made a difference?
No, probably wouldn't have. But
yeah,
it might have because, you know, Alan Jackson singing Our Million Ways to Die.
Yeah, exactly.
So he knew it was a comedy, so he kind of like, you know, tongue-in-cheek.
I think it makes a difference, right, Eric?
No.
Oh, it doesn't? I think it would, though.
Like
if you didn't know what reverse cowgirl meant, that would make a difference. No,
it would make a difference.
Let's not talk about that anymore. The first time you say it, it's good, but after the whole show.
What an ow.
Maybe it is going on. Blazing Saddles or A Million Ways to Die in the West? Which one is the funniest comedy western of all time?
Million Ways to Die in the West by a million times.
Really?
Yeah, Seth MacFarlane.
By a billion
Seth
times.
Seth MacFarlane's great, and I love it, but Blazing Saddles
is
a classic.
No, it was not a good movie.
What? You didn't like Blazing Saddles?
I'm sorry.
Well, okay. Well, listen to myself and Eric on
this. Did you like any Mel Brooks movies?
Yeah.
Mel Brooks is great.
I think he's still kicking.
He's almost 90, and he's still doing his thing. Almost. He's like 88, 87.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get him on the show.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're 92. I'd love
to Let's get him on the show.
I'd love to have Mel. When I was a kid, I loved watching his movies.
They're great.
Was he one of the writers for the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Possibly.
I know he wrote for some shows.
Say that on the air.
What? Oh,
it's possible he was involved in that. But Blazing Saddles was great.
Well, what's wrong with Van?
To me, it's like very close between which Western comedy is the best and funniest. They're both amazing. Blazing Saddles never gets old. It was like 1974, and even our generation loves it.
And I like A Million
Harvey Korman was great in it too.
I wonder if people will say the same thing about A Million Ways to Die in the West. I mean,
they'll say
they that
much
like
better.
30 years
they
from now.
They may. I mean, we will. But again,
yeah,
not many people.
Dave
at least,
won't.
At least in the public
in
side,
years,
the reviews haven't been great. Well, they're long dead, but. Oh, have you updated your will?
Yeah, I did.
All right, good.
But you're not in it.
No, Eric's in there now.
Oh,
I didn't ask
Eric's
for,
in it too?
Yeah. No, I didn't ask for Greg's spelling, so I guess that means something.
Oh,
or his ID.
Oh, okay.
I did take your DNA.
Hey, you know what? This is Breakthrough Entertainment here on KPHX 1480.
Oh, yeah, it is.
You didn't introduce us.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm Dave Isaac, Joseph Erdo. Great, great, fabulous film columnist.
I am fabulous.
Well, say that again.
I don't know if I want to.
Did you hear that? You'll never get the reverse cowgirl that way.
Yes. Eric, we'll discuss this
I
later.
Am totally fabulous.
Wow. Can you do that, Eric?
I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know
How
why.
About Greg?
No.
I don't know why I can't pick up chicks at these bar calls. I keep trying. I say,
sound
hey.
Sound like a valley guy now.
Say, hey, you want to go?
Are you having more
place?
Success with the dudes because of that?
I don't know. They look at me weird and like some wink, but doesn't
okay,
work
we're going to have to manage you, and we will get you a girl.
Okay.
Or we'll find your agent. Or three.
Yeah.
Really?
We pay could. Top okay. dollar.
Yeah.
Exciting. Top dollar.
We take
you
MasterCard.
Pay top dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
So we have to go to Nevada to do this for you, though.
Why?
Well, yeah.
Because it's much easier.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I still think we need to do the relationship dating advice from Joseph J. Erdo.
Yeah. Segment. You want to do a theme show on that?
I'll do a segment. So if anyone wants relationship advice from me, the relationship expert, nope, 602-252-1480,
602-252-1480.
Way to sell it.
Way to sell that.
I know.
He's wiggling his...
I am serious.
Yeah.
Like if you do have relationship advice, we will.
If you need relationship,
thank you very much.
Most people do.
If you need relationship advice, then please give us a call, and one of us, I'm sure, will help you.
On this show?
Yes, of course. On
the
this
Western show.
On the Western show.
What is this called?
The Breakthrough Entertainment's Old West show.
Yeah, Old West show. That's what I was thinking about.
Well,
Old West. Speaking
Western
of Old
show.
West, one of my favorite TV shows. I bet Eric will see that. The Wild Wild West, right? Good show.
Yeah, my sister used to date him.
Oh, wow. Which one? James West?
Robert Conrad.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. That was a good show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love that show.
What'd she say about Robert Conrad that you cannot say on the air?
Not much, actually.
Oh, she didn't like him that much?
Well, they dated for like a couple months.
That's it?
That's it.
Then what happened?
Then he moved on to another 18-year-old.
Oh, wow. That is just not appropriate. How old was he at the time?
40.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
We don't like that.
But my sister,
we?
That was her favorite show, and when she finally met him and he asked her out, she was really excited. And so then he literally moved on to another girl that was 18. My sister was 18 at the time.
I don't think that's appropriate. What do you say, Joseph?
I'm appalled. I am walking out right now.
We are appalled.
Just to be in the same
we're not
room with
walk
Dave.
I mean. What? I didn't date her. It wasn't me. It was Robert Conrad.
Okay.
How about that other guy? His
but that's
partner.
One of her favorite shows of all time.
Yeah. How about you? It was good, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
Who was the partner of Robert Conrad? He was good.
Oh, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, I forgot too. I think he died, though. But he was good.
He did die, yeah.
Okay, back to Joseph
I'm getting,
J. Erdo.
Wow. That is some introduction. I do want to say that I'm still getting texts from...
Yeah.
I'm actually getting texts from people who want to give me relationship advice, apparently.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I would like to offer it, not receive it. I'm good to go.
Oh, you want to offer?
Ross Martin.
Oh. But yes. What would you offer?
It was Ross Martin.
Ross
what
Martin.
Would I offer? I don't know. That's what's interesting.
What was his name in
I would love
Artemis
to,
Gordon.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
I would love to give, you know, I think it's a new segment.
Are you guys still talking?
I do want to say this, though. Seriously, if you have any comments about some Old West movies, and I'm serious about the relationship advice, too, but if you have any comments about Old West movies or any movies that you've seen in general, give us a call, 602-252-1480, or check out our breakradioshow.com website. Click on the big F and, you know, leave a comment on our Facebook page.
This is reminding me, and I'm not saying you are or not, but sort of the 40-year-old virgin, how with Steve Carell. No, and I'm not saying I have no idea if you've
Dave
done your thing. You possibly have, and that's great. But it's sort of getting there.
What are you talking
about? No, in a good way. This
is fun. What are you talking
fun.
About, Willis?
No, this is a good thing. No, that's
a good
a
thing?
Great movie, but Steve Carell
if he
is
gets
a great
paid
guy.
Like Steve Carell, it's a good thing.
Well, no. Well, okay, well, I'll have to make a documentary about
it. I want to say,
can
you know,
we make a documentary about
make
this?
A documentary. Of, you know what? My dinosaur friend, I'm not allowed to say his name, but our dinosaur friend.
Oh, he's old.
He
Barney?
Calls me that.
Is that what
no,
you call him?
No, not Barney.
Most people call him George or Willie.
T, don't say his name, but...
You call it dinosaur? Is that because it's obsolete? It doesn't work?
Whatever. He refers to me as the 40-year-old virgin, too, because he...
Virgin 2?
All right. You know what?
I didn't know there was a sequel.
Yeah, that's what I...
Well, the 30-year-old... there we go. Joseph.
When we make the documentary, right?
And at the end, we could find your perfect woman. And French. And then
she's French.
And then we could do what Howard Cosell did, Eric, right? In Bananas.
Call the shots.
Yeah. Well,
play
sort
by
of.
Play.
Yeah, it depends. Were they blank or not? But Bananas. This is Howard Cosell at the honeymoon of Joseph J. Erdahl. Well, I forgot your name. But anyway.
The 40-year-old
I think this
in
is
the
a
Old
great
West.
Movie. We could do it. And we'll have bodyguards to make sure you remain intact.
Wow.
Until
intact.
The end.
Oh, intact. I get it now.
Yeah, until the end.
And then afterwards, you would probably like this most. You can break into song. Everyone could be wearing robes and,
I would love
whatever the
song
is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you have that
no,
song?
I don't
Let the Sun Shine In?
Well, no. Eric doesn't have it. Even if he
we
did,
played
he doesn't.
That song, actually, on a previous show.
Oh, we did?
But, yeah, and bringing it back to our Old West theme, we did get a text from my colleague at AZ Weekly, Stan Robinson. He says, my favorite Western movie is The Sons of Katie Elder. It's the top of his list.
That's a good movie.
That was good.
John Sons Wayne, Dean
Elder.
Martin.
Yeah.
Love Dean Martin. Yeah, that was good.
I haven't seen it, but, it gets the kudos from Stan
that
Robinson.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, we give it thumbs up.
Yeah. And check out AZ Weekly, of course. You've got four film critics in there every single week. It's on news racks throughout the valley.
That's
I'm in
easy
there.
For you to say. Yeah, you are in there.
I'm in there. My face.
Your face is in there?
My face, yeah.
The first time... Okay. I've ever seen your face.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Greg's cringing. Let's talk a little bit about Palo Alto. Of course, I spoke with Gene Coppola.
Oh, you mean
Coppola.
The city
Palo
in California?
Alto. Yeah.
Yes, that's where James Franco's from.
Yeah, because he wrote the book that the movie's based on. Emma Roberts plays a young woman who is torn between an illicit flirtation with her soccer coach, played by James Franco, and
flirtation. They were kissing.
I know. Well, it's not just flirtation. I'm putting it lightly here.
No, kissing is just flirting.
Oh, it is.
Face.
Wow, I'm not doing it right.
No, flirting that's not is true.
Flirting with the face?
I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out.
Well, okay. And an unrequited crush.
If it is, I'm missing out.
Well, she's disgusting, Dave.
She's torn between her soccer coach and a crush on a sweet stoner played by Jack Kilmer.
Oh, what a sweet
Val guy. Kilmer's son.
Yeah,
is that
Val
right?
Kilmer's also in the film.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Oh,
he is.
Wow.
You got a pretty good cast here. Of course, it was written by Gia Coppola, but it was based on and it was directed by Gia Coppola as well. It's her feature length or directorial debut, as we spoke to her earlier on the show. But it's based on James Franco's book. It's a collection of short stories. I did you know that James Franco was a celebrated author?
He's starting to annoy me.
I know.
I didn't know.
He made that art installation about Three's Company or something like that, too. Or
he's overexposed. Go away.
Overexposed?
So is Seth Rogen. Both of them,
what?
Go away.
What?
Yeah,
that's
I didn't
great.
Like him exposing himself in that film.
Oh, you
Seth
did?
Rogen? No, that was terrible. I didn't want to see that.
Wow.
That's not what I meant. You know it.
I know, but no, you know what? The thing with
James, great.
The thing with James Franco, he's doing way too much. He thinks that he's an artiste.
Right. Stop it.
Well, what I have heard with James is that in the more dramatic films, he really gets in the character, the method actor that really even between takes is still in character. And I forgot who it was. It might have been Tyrese Gibson.
Smoking tons of dope in Pineapple Express.
Perhaps, but that's okay. But he, I think it might have been Tyrese, but I think has made some people upset because they don't understand that, you know, he's just getting in the character like that, which a lot of actors do. I mean, they stay in character even between. I think he's great. I obviously don't know him, you know, away from the set, so I'm not sure, you know, how he is, but he seems all right. Well, I see what you guys mean, though. I mean, he is doing a lot of different types of things.
Yeah, it's just different things. And then one more comment before I talk more about the movie. You know, Spring Breakers are making the sequel.
But he's not upset about it.
Yeah, he's very upset about that. So I don't know.
Oh, he doesn't get to wear his gold teeth?
I'm just upset they're making the movie in the first place.
I know.
I still haven't seen the first
horrible
one.
Horrible. Don't see it.
It was awful.
Don't see it. Right. Just look at pictures.
Pictures.
Yeah, just look at pictures. But anyway, Palo Alto plays out in a way that suggests that James Franco aspired to accommodate just about every annoyingly trivial reason. Wow.
Bravo.
You okay?
Bravo.
Yes.
That's called a mic, and it can move as you
drink.
Well,
my mic wants to drink a little coffee,
too. He forgot it was there.
He tried to drink coffee with a mic in front of your face.
That is so weird.
But Palo Alto is just one, you know, teenagers, their life is just so horrible. It's just so much suffering. That's what all this movie is about. You know, Giacoppola's vision is competent, if not derivative, but the complete lack of focus and frivolous nature of it all makes for one exceptionally boring exercise in ensemble insanity. Thumbs down. I'm sorry, James Franco, this does not work.
She's never going to be on the show again.
I know she won't be on the show
And you didn't ask for my opinion on the trailer.
I'm sorry. Did you like
this? This looks good.
It looks good to you?
I mean, well,
I put that too.
James Franco's in it. I mean, and you know, the Coppola family. I mean, you gotta love them. So
you gotta.
We say give it a chance. Emma Roberts is great.
Okay. Well, we got a lot more coming up on Breakthrough Entertainment's Old West show. But before then, you know, a song from a movie that kind of introduced me to the Western genre. I want to thank my dear departed friend, family friend, Bill Subers, for introducing me to the Western genre. This song.
Dear departed?
Yeah, he's passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. But this song is sung by the Maverick Choir. It's from Maverick, Amazing Grace.
Oh, do you know that one?
No, he doesn't.
Here we go now. One.
No, he doesn't.
Two.
No, he doesn't.
Three.
No,
four.
He doesn't.
Five. All right. Six. Here we go.
I guess I lose.
Oh, we're still on.
This is 1480 AM KPHX. We'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
This is 1480.